Through a Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.
And welcome back to Through a Scottish Prism, folks. Nice to have you back. It's at this point, I usually say it's been a week since we last spoke, and we're a week closer to independence, but I think under the circumstances, it's better that I say it's a week closer to a vaccine and a cure, hopefully. I think which is more appropriate, as the old COVID-19 shows no signs of really abating. And I hope you're all keeping safe, and your families and friends and everyone you know is as well. But today, to today's business, we have two guests with us today. Not one, two for the price of one, and you don't even have a license fee. And the first person we have on here is someone who I booked several weeks ago, because the gentleman in question has such an active social life. He's always at engagements, social events. Just one life of parties and receptions as he goes. None other than my dear friend John Dee from that small fishing village on the south side of Glasgow, Bodhead. Johnny,
how's it going, mate?
I'm doing good, great. It's a fair, it must be what, at least 5 hours since I last spoke to you. I mean, I don't know.
I'll be there or thereabouts, mate.
Aye. You good? And I take it, as I asked then, I'll ask again, I take it Mrs. D's also in good fine fettle?
She is indeed. That's, she is indeed. We're both suffering a wee bit. We're not used to this physical labour, and obviously, being cooped up, we're doing a fair bit of work in the back garden, so feeling it a bit.
Well, you've got to do something to get rid of the, yeah, the turn the hours over. But the reason, you know, when John and I planned this to have John on here, was because John was the first person ever to talk to me about list parties way back in 2016. And as there's been a lot of interest recently before the events that happened this week as well, we had planned to have this discussion to talk about numbers, because John, you love the numbers and all the stuff behind it, don't you?
Well, kind of, it's arithmetic, and I don't understand how anyone can argue with arithmetic. My whole thing with this is that there hasn't been enough discussion, and I was starting to get worried that we were running out of time and nobody was talking about it.
Correct.
I think it needs debated and discussed.
Correct. And you're going to hopefully simplify, which leads me. Did you see what I did there? What a link that was, John. which brings me beautifully into my other guest, a good friend of this show, and a lot of you have been hearing and reading about her recently, which is Colette Walker, the leader of the Independent Scottish Party, the ISP for short. Hello there, Colette, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, and it's Independence for Scotland Party.
Okay, I beg your pardon, but ISP for short. But
ISP, yes.
Should John and I be curtsying just now, or do we call you ma'am? Or
no, we'll have none of that, thank you.
You're just the same lassie we've always known.
I'm just the same lass to you.
Good. Well, we're going to have a hopeful chat. I know you've been in the eye of a storm since the announcement, and I should just make it abundantly clear, because a lot of the questions you've been getting asked, which I think, because I know the facts, are unfair, because you were kind of forced to launch earlier than you planned, because you didn't have all everything in the role, like your website and the membership abilities, etc. But you were kind of forced into making the announcement early, were you not?
Yeah, unfortunately we were. We only heard from the Electoral Commission last Thursday, and we then started working on the website, etc., that we couldn't really do anything about until we got approval from the Electoral Commission, because they might have came up with something that needed tweaked, or they weren't happy about a certain, maybe even the name or something. So we could have went down the line of doing this whole website, and it might just not have been the right thing. So we held off until we got approval. But of course then on social media, which is great sometimes and a bad thing in other times, screenshots were put up of the approval and being on the Electoral Commission's website. So we had to then just make a quick announcement just to say, you know, yes, we have been approved, and to bear with as well, at the present moment we set up the website and just cross the T's and dot the I's. And especially at this particular time, you know, it's really hard for everybody. We're all in lockdown, and we, you know, we've got other things just now that we weren't really expecting to be on the cards when we were setting up the party. So, we've asked people to, you know, bear with us. We've set up the Twitter page, which is going really, really well. And we are working on the website. We're just getting all that finalised.
Good, because the other thing that, cause I know some people have been asking, I mean, I've got some questions as well, some, and I've had some ridiculous ones that I wouldn't even insult you with, but things like, oh, why are you the leader, and why is she this, and why is she that? Because if you'd explain to the listeners that you have to have certain positions filled before the Electoral Commission will approve you, and am I right?
Yes, when you submit an application to the Electoral Commission, you need three particular people on board, and that's a leader, a nominating officer and a treasurer. Now, we had a team of people that decided to start setting up the party. We can't have members because we didn't have, we're not a political party, so we can't subscribe members. So it's the co-founders that then decide who was going to be taking the role at that particular point in time so we could get the application in. So we all agreed on who was taking on what position.
Right.
And when you're submitting to the Electoral Commission, you also need to do your constitution. You need to let them know who's on the exec. So that has all been finalised, and it's all been approved by the Electoral Commission.
Good.
I don't really understand why people are saying, you know, should it not have been elected by members, or I don't see how that works, because we can't have members. We weren't a party at that point.
Exactly. Well, people, you know, we all know what social media are like. But that's unfortunately half the problem. But John, if I could bring you in here, my friend, on the numbers. Now, we know that this is a list. Correct me if I'm wrong at any time here, Colette, but it's a list-only party. There were no candidates fighting constituencies. And you, as I say, back in 2016, if I remember you talking to me that night where I was losing the will to live, because you do love these numbers and I don't, as you know. I've sort of got the attention span of a Donald Trump when it comes to things like that. you've always thought that a list, independent list party was not only desirable, but was a winning formula.
Well, I think it's absolutely essential, given the constraints put upon us by our bosses at Westminster. We have a group of people in our Parliament who simply put Scotland down at every turn. And the way the system is set up, if we continue to vote the way we have done for the last number of years, sorry, Roddy, can you hear me?
Perfectly. Yeah, perfectly.
Right, okay. So I'm getting some interference. So,
what, from your wife or what?
No, she's gone out.
A different kind of interference.
Yeah. So, 2016 really brought it home to me, and I thought, you know, we've just voted in the constituency and every constituency for an SNP MSP. And we've been lumbered with several MSPs we don't vote for, who will then attack us from all angles, you know. So, and I start to think, how do you go about changing that? And if you look at the results from 2016, six seats were won by the Greens with just 6.6% of the vote. Mm-hmm. Now, the SNP. On the regional vote, that is. In the regional vote, the SNP had 41.7% of the vote, mm-hmm. And achieved just four seats. Mm-hmm. So, I just at that point, I started to look, well, you know, we must be able to address this.
Mm-hmm. But your original plan was just you were thinking sort of the west of Scotland or something, really?
Originally, I was just thinking, how do you do it here in East Renfrewshire? Mm-hmm. And then it became obvious that you couldn't. You would need to do the entire region, or the entire constituency, rather. Mm-hmm. And then, I tell you, understand, initially I thought, right, we'll just get one person to stand here and we'll take one of the seats and that'll get rid of one of them. And the more I looked at it, I thought, you can't do that. You really need to have four or five people so that you can put up a list in that constituency. And hopefully you can take three or four of the seats then.
Right. And you've expanded from that. So you think this concept that Colette here and her colleagues have got is a winning formula. Am I right?
Absolutely. I think long before, obviously, with the respect to to Colette and our party, I've been banging on about this for 4 years. I've been unable to find any argument really that says it can't work.
Except the doubting Thomases. So we know the concept now, and we'll go into it in greater depth, John. You can give us some more numbers shortly. So Colette, we have you know, the green light. It's okay to go. Everyone's saying it. So how do you intend to attract people to vote for the ISP? What's your plan?
Our plan? Well, at the present moment, when you're looking for people to vote who support independence, mm-hmm. fundamentally, you've really just got the SNP and Greens. So the majority of people then would then either vote SNP 1 and 2 because they don't understand the system, mm-hmm. or they would then do SNP 1 for the constituency and then vote Greens as their 2 because they're the only other party that really voted for independence to try and get as many independent voting MSPs into Holyrood. So I think we live in a democracy. I really don't like when people have to lend another party their vote. But you maybe not necessarily agree with the majority of their policies. I think people should be allowed a choice, and I think having another party that then have individual policies, looking at things in a fresher outlook, looking to look at you know, think tank organisations, etc., to look at policies and have life experience of things. Just politics slightly different, a different outlook in politics, let's put it that way, and it gives the voter a more of a choice, and that's what I would prefer as a voter, is to then have a choice and not just lend somebody their vote. You know, we heard about it in the general election, lend us your vote. But then you have an MSP or an MP arriving, getting elected, and you voted them in, but you don't agree with what they're doing once they get elected.
Right, so you're not saying lend us your vote, you're really wanting the vote, but you don't want the vote. You want the vote, obviously, of the second votes of the SNP, but you are broadly sympathetic to the SNP, am I right? Or am I wrong, or am I a donut?
Yeah, we're not going against the SNP. We're regional list. We want to optimise the amount of independent MSPs in Holyrood. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like any party, we're not going to agree with every single policy the SNP or any other party for that matter puts forward. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I mean, we wouldn't be living in a democracy if we all agreed on the same thing. Mm-hmm. It would be very boring, to say the least. Mm-hmm. So yes, we will have our own views on certain policies, and we'll have our own policy decisions. The SNP, they have done some great things for Scotland. I'm not going to dispute that. But again, I think we really need to let voters have their choice, elect MSPs that maybe they feel that represent them more than any other party that they just need to lend the vote to.
Can I ask you, you know, people will say, well, we've got the Greens, they're an independence supporting party. Why do we need another one?
I think I've just said we need more choice. They might not agree with a lot of their policies, and again, a lot of people then will just then vote SNP 1 and 2, mm-hmm. And that really doesn't do anything to optimise MSPs in Holyrood that want independence, right. Because as we've just explained, the more people vote one and two for SNP, the less regional seats they're going to get. They've only got four regional seats at the present moment.
Which brings me on, John. What about the people who are saying to us here on social media, "Oh, let's not split the vote. You know, if you, this is bad because it will be harmful." I mean, look at Rise, and you know, this is bad. It'll split the vote. What do you say to them?
Well, basically, you can't splitting the vote is a lame argument, really, because essentially the implication is usually that you're going to do some damage to the SNP. Now, if you have 100% of the list vote and you get nothing for it, splitting it and getting 50% or 25% and still getting nothing just makes no difference. So it's a pointless argument in my eyes. I had a wee look at the constituencies just based on an argument like that. Because if in the list votes, in the regional lists, if everybody had voted the same way that they did in the constituency, there would have been very little difference. In Glasgow, for instance, there are two Conservative, four Labour and one Green. And if everybody had voted the same way, you'd had two Conservatives and five Labs, so you would have lost a Labour and a Green.
What you mean by that, John, is if there was, I don't know what the total, if there was 100,000 people had voted SNP and 100,000 people had voted in the list SNP, and the yeah. same, that's what you mean by voted the same way. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So overall, through all the regions, if all the regions had voted the same way, you would have had basically two additional SNP MSPs, but you would have lost all six Greens. Mm-hmm. So basically, people already vote differently and the less vote from they do in the constituency. What we really want is for them to do more of that.
Yeah, because the Greens, they stood in two or three, I don't know how many constituencies they stood in 2016. But certainly one of the arguments from the SNP people is that if they hadn't stood in Edinburgh Central, then Ruth Davidson wouldn't have won. Their standing, they felt, allowed her to win a seat, you know, effectively give the Tories one more seat. Can you confirm that one?
Well, to be honest, Roddy, at this point, no, I couldn't. I can certainly check it for you and come back to you. But yeah. I was mainly concerned with the list vote and the difference between, you know, the votes at in the constituency in the list and how it could impact us. And essentially, if you look at it from that point of view, really just by attracting small numbers of votes, we could remove quite substantial numbers of unionists. As I said already, the Greens got six seats on just over 6%.
Right. So where's it? Do you have at this moment for Colette here, if she was to get, I don't know if you can do it blanket Scotland wide, but what sort of percentage of the vote would Colette and the ISP be looking to start making some inroads?
Well, really, again, if you come back, I've pointed you at this guy before, Gavin Barry, and Gavin did an impressive piece of work on this. And I think the tipping point starts to be somewhere around about between 10% and 12%, because around 6-7%, all you're doing is replacing the Greens.
Right.
So it's basically once you get beyond that to the next, so the Greens usually take the last seat or the second last seat. So once you get to a stage beyond that, you then start tipping unionists out of their chairs, and that starts to happen sort of between 10-12%. I have to say that's 10 or 12%. Of the vote, not of the SNP vote. Mm-hmm. That's the entire vote. By taking sort of 20-25% of the SNP second vote, you would clearly go beyond that sort of number.
Yeah. So, Colette, are you confident that, you know, that tipping point of 10-12% is achievable?
I think at the present moment, I think people are looking for things to change, and I think they're looking for another avenue at the present moment. So yes, I'm confident that if people are given a greater choice, then they will vote differently. The only thing is, and what we've just discussed and what we see in social media, is that people don't actually still really understand the voting system. Because we have the two votes, and the first one is first past the post, that's easy enough to understand. People get that. It's the second option, it's the regional list. People really don't understand that, and that's why we are getting splitting the vote. So it's something that we are really going to have to make sure that our members and the overall general public actually understand what the regional list system actually means and how it's worked out. Mm-hmm. And what you were saying there about Gavin, yeah, that he done a really, really good explanation. It's a really good piece of work, and it's probably something that we would be looking to put up with his approval on our website, because it really outlines in quite a clear, precise way of how it goes. The other thing that I saw on social media today was somebody referred to using the STV voting system at Holyrood. So again, that's can't something that. They can't. We don't do that.
No,
so
but you can't. You can't do it without the permission of our imperial masters in London.
No, exactly. But that again shows you though that people don't actually understand what voting system we're actually using and how it actually works. If people are actually putting on social media as part of their debate about splitting the votes, they put up that we use STV voting system. So I think people really need to be educated more on the actual overall system of voting in a Scottish parliamentary election, and that's something that we really are going to have to concentrate on putting up on our website and putting on leaflets, etc., so that people do, because again, not everybody is maybe politically engaged as all of us. You know, they just want to look at a candidate, or they say, oh right, they're for independence, so I'll just vote for them. And again, obviously the SNP are going to be telling, you know, their voters vote one and two, but surely they know that it really just does not work. It can't work because of the system.
It's how hard they tell them is the they can't very well not say that, but it's how hard they tell them. And that's the thing. But just one thing, I mean, you're talking about using STV, etc. For the certainly the unionists use STV and BBC and Channel 4 to get their candidates elected, and that's how they do it. Which brings me on. What I think, I like to throw a wee joke there again. But no, what I was going to say is that what I think you're talking about, the educating of the, with no disrespect to the vote, but we need to educate. But that's where one of my other little hobby horses comes in. I've been saying, I don't understand why the SNP, they have got at their fingertips a huge reach through the pro-indie new media people, like, dare I say, myself, but the important big guys like Wings Over Scotland, Wee Ginger Doug, Grousebeater, reading his works this week. I don't think we can include Peter Bell in this one, but those people that we should all be helping to increase by putting out information and blogs that support the concept of SNP 1 Indie List 2. And that's what I think we should do. And I think you should, with respect, ma'am, curtsying, you should be sending some information to the bloggers and saying, here, could you please print that? Could you put that on your blog page? Could you send that out? And I think that's what's, that would help. But just to go on, I've got to broach on something that is now you're almost scared to broach upon. But a lot of people have, as I said, when I announced I was doing this, people sent me in, certain questions. I ruled out the first question. It's from Mr. Jackson Carlow of Newton Mearns, but I decided not to ask that one. the GRA comes up all the time. Now, some people are trying to smear you by saying that's the, you're just anti, you're transphobics, and you, that's the only reason you started this party. You know, the usual attack that they have. Well, I know it's important to you. It's not the your main motivation for this party, is it?
Of course it's not. But of course they're going to use that. We have never... We've never mentioned that all we're talking about is independence and the Read No List and the reasons why we're doing it, and again what we've just discussed about the, that how the system actually works, and it's flawed to vote for the same party twice. We've never mentioned GRE. Yes, people know our stance on the GRE reform bill. It's no secret. It's not the reason why we set up the party, but yes, we feel that to have a party that you know is there to stand up and protect women's rights and single sex safe spaces, etc. This has got nothing to do with, and I can't stand when they're getting called transphobic, because there are transgender people and detransitioning people out there that are against the GRE reform bill, and they're still getting called transgender, transphobic. So at the end of the day, this is not anything to do with being transgender or trans rights. This is to do with actually protecting women's rights as they stand at the present moment.
I was going to say, there is also, which perhaps the SNP don't want to face the reality, they're losing a lot of votes from women on this very issue, and they're certain those votes are not going to go to the Green Party, because they're even more stringent or strident, should I say, than the SNP on GRA.
Well, we done some research while we were setting up the party, done a bit of market research, and we done quite a bit of that, and the responses that we got were quite in agreement, that a lot of people then felt that, as they said, politically homeless. That's a phrase that I got that I got told quite a lot in my replies, were that they felt politically homeless. They didn't know who to vote for, because they wouldn't vote Greens. Maybe possibly they would have voted Green before, but they just couldn't now because of their stance in the GRE. And that, you know, I mean, that again is to do with people having a choice, and you know, people need the right to have a vote. I really would hate, and I think we all would hate, for people not to vote, because everybody worked, and especially women worked very hard to get women to have the right to vote, and for women then to feel that they're feeling politically homeless is a disgrace in 2020. So yes, there is that choice there, but that's not our, you know, I mean, that is definitely not our main issue, and I take grievance at that, because we're there to optimise the MSPs in Holyrood to promote and get an independent Scotland, to work with independent voting MSPs in a collaboration at cross party to actually then get an independent Scotland. That is the main focus of the party.
Excellent, and I was nearly standing up and applauding there.
I think the clue is actually in the name, actually, of the party, Independence for Scotland Party.
I wouldn't, not really, because, you know, they're called the Labour Party, and you know what I mean? That's all I'm saying.
But again, that is the other thing. You say the Labour Party. Now, you know, it has been well advertised that there's 30-40% of Labour, Scottish Labour members, are independent voters. So again, would they want to vote for SNP or Greens in the regional list? So at the end of the day, again, you're looking at other parties that have members that are independent supporters, but wouldn't want to maybe necessarily vote SNP or Greens. It gives them a choice.
I will most certainly be voting SNP in the constituency, that is for sure. John, another question. We've agreed that the concept's right, that the numbers are there, and it seems to me it's an education job that has to be done to get more people on board. And if we could just get, you know, I don't know, 1 in 4, 1 in 5 of the SNP voters, some of these Labour voters that Colette, say, you know, mentioned there, and some independents, and maybe some people at the moment who are not too happy with the Greens and certain things, there could be a huge amount of unionists getting booted out of Holyrood, couldn't there?
Well, absolutely. Depending on how it's done, I mean, you can actually model scenarios where you're losing 35 or 36 unionists. It's unlikely to happen, but you can actually model a scenario where that would be the case. Mm-hmm. But I think just during, we're talking about taking votes from Labour and Tories and everywhere else, I think it shouldn't be forgotten. There's probably over 40% of the electorate didn't vote last time. Now, there's a school of thought that suggests that, as Colette was saying, that people who just feel politically homeless just don't vote at all. Mm-hmm. And if you give them somewhere to go, then you can automatically boost your numbers, and that's a massive pool of votes. Mm.
But which brings me on to another question I want to ask you, is that this whole, we've agreed this concept's right, the possible bum bum bum. Rise tried this. I have my opinions on that. Why did Rise fail, do you think?
Well, again, it would be a personal opinion, Roddy, but the Rise came out attacking the SNP, telling the SNP how they telling SNP voters how SNP were getting everything wrong, and they should actually vote for them, and they would correct it, and they would do this, and they would do the next thing. But you have to understand that you're actually attacking the party that all the people you want to vote for you vote for in the first place. So you're telling all these people that they were wrong. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to do that, you can expect a backlash. Mm-hmm. And that's precisely what happened to Rise.
I was going to say it. The People's Front for the Liberation of Byers Road, they thought they were smarter than everyone else. And they came a cropper. they're still telling everyone in the Yes movement what they're doing wrong. Everything else is wrong. But Colette, you're taking a wise stance here, where you're majoring on the biggest issue, the issue that's the most important to everyone in Scotland, is the constitution. Now, our unionist friends like Mr. Jackson Carlow there in Newton Mearns might not want to accept that, but it is, and that is going to be front and centre with going forward. Am I correct?
Of course it is, and I think now. Not only what we thought was the biggest thing that we were living through in the past 3 years, Brexit, I think people were starting to see the Tory party for what they were and what it was to be ruled by Westminster, and that Scotland weren't getting a say, etc. And, you know, and Joanna Cherry was the one that was having to push forward and show the true colours of, you know, that Scotland were completely dismissed. But right now, with this pandemic that we're all going through, I think people are now really starting to have their eyes opened and to see what Scotland could be doing if they could make full decisions on their own and not be given wee bits and pieces, wee pieces of bread through devolution rights, just so that we can make slight difference to what Westminster are telling us. And people are so confused at the present moment about what are the rights and the wrongs and the do's and the don'ts of what's happening down in England at the present moment. And again, there is this issue, and I've even had it with people that I know, that they hear the statements getting made about what's happening, but that's for England, but it's coming from the Prime Minister. And then you've got Nicola Sturgeon coming and doing her statement and saying what's for Scotland. But people are getting confused what's for Scotland and what's for the UK because of the devolution rights. So if it was just Scotland, then it would, you know, we would then just be able to get on and do what we needed to do. And I wouldn't, you know, I mean, Nicola's having a really difficult job at the present moment. This is nothing like anybody's ever had to deal with before. But I think she's been clear, she's been precise, and yes, and she's admitted no government's going to get this completely right the first time round, because we've not had to deal with this before. But you really have to sit and consider what's the best for everybody in Scotland, for people's lives, people's jobs, people's mental health. It's a very, very difficult time for anybody that's leader just now in a political party and who's governing it. And I think she's the one that's actually been the most clear, the most precise, and has been very steady with her decisions.
She has been absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, and as I say, I'm very proud to have somebody as lead, been so precise and clear and steady as our leader at the present moment. But compared to Boris Johnson, who I really just didn't understand anything what he said on Sunday night at all.
And it just doesn't. Neither did he.
No. Well, the thing was, when you're discussing people's lives and trying to suppress this horrible, horrible, horrible condition, they're now saying that if you can hire a cleaner to come into your house and clean your house, but then you can't have your mother and father or your son and daughter in your house.
Yeah.
It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
No, it doesn't.
You know, it really just baffles me why that has been allowed to go ahead.
Well, you know,
Can I just pass?
Well, I was going to just say about Edwina Curry was trying to explain that thing about the cleaner. And it was so Tory, you know. She said, well, you can't have your son. Piers Morgan had said about having his two kids he hadn't seen for 10 weeks. She said, well, you can't have them. She said, you can have your cleaner, but you can't have someone to come from a different house. So what are you trying to say, Edwina? All you Tories keep your cleaner in the basement? Just a nonsense. On you go, John. Sorry, I cut over you.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think most people's kind of perception of that was it was just nonsense. I don't think it was nonsense. I think it's, as you know, I'm quite cynical, but I think it was deliberately vague. I think the Tory party will now be able to say, well, we said this and the public did that, so it's the public's fault.
I agree.
I think that's entirely what that message was about. It was about shifting the blame from the government to the public. As for Piers Morgan, I've had to actually unblock him because I know
it's a strange world.
It's really bizarre. But I'd actually tweeted him the day before or something and said, look, if you want to see your kids, just put your house up for sale and they can come and view it. Because that's the stupidity of the law.
You're kidding. You're kidding. Is that really what you can
do? That's actually true. I was talking about that last night. Actually, the estate agents in England are now opened, and there is actually viewings of houses at the present moment down in England. So you can actually go and view a house.
I'm not often called for words, but that really gets me. That's a belter.
You can hire a cleaner to clean the house for your viewers to come when you're selling your house, but you can't have your mum, your dad, your sister, your brother, your son and daughter in your house. But you can have a cleaner and somebody come to view your house.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Dozens of random strangers.
Well, you know, they never fail to amaze me with their stupidity. But that's the other thing, and I've got to say, I think Nicola, I agree with you wholeheartedly with you, Colette. I mean, she's leader of the party I'm in, and I think she's been magnificent. She's been the adult in the whole of the UK over COVID-19, without a shadow of doubt. She's been very, very good on this. But at the outset, she said, you know, I'm doing this for everybody. I'm parking independence. That's another argument for another show and another debate. I think it was already parked, but that's another story. But the unionists can't stop politicising this. They're not missing a chance, and their agents in the corrupt media are going on about, you know, the Sky old folks home, which they're politicising like hell. And it turns out that the private company that owns it brought up people from Kent because there was staffing shortages because of the Brexit situation. It's just disgusting the way they behave.
Well, at the end of the day, you know that they're going to use any opportunity. You know, they done the same just through every debate during Brexit as well. So you know that when you hear the likes of Jackson Carlow when he was in the debate with Nicola leading up to even the election, that's all he talked about was independence. And it's funny how it's only ever like the Lib Dems, Labour and the Tories that ever keep going on about independence.